That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show with me, That Money Guy, Gabriel Nussbaum, live on FUBAR Radio. And we are here to do one thing and one thing only. It's very, very simple. We are here to make you better with your money. I feel like that sounds like a good deal. You stick around and just listen, put your headphones in and have a good time. And in roughly an hour's time, you will officially be better with your money than you are today. And we use several different tactics to actually go ahead and do that. Number one, we like to bring you up to speed with the news. But not the boring news, not the depressing... Well, sometimes actually the depressing news. But the news that's actually relevant to your back pocket, to the money in your pocket, the things that you need to know, the things that will affect the decisions you make with your hard-earned cash. We bring you up to speed with what's going on so that you can act quickly and swiftly without doing any of the research yourself, because we do that for you. And then we always bring in some incredible guests, some experts in finance, some experts in their own industry, some personal finance advice. We do the full range. We give you the full plethora, a full experience every single week. And this week, we've got some really quite incredible interviews for you to listen to. Number one, we've got Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor of the Exchequer. That's right. That Money Show goes big or goes home. And in this case, we have gone big. Rachel Reeves and I will be discussing money. I mean, obviously, that's what the show's all about. And then also, we have Brian Burns, the head of personal finance at Moneybox. You know that little app that probably a lot of you have been using to help you save towards a first-time home or a second-time home or just a home in general? Yep, the head of personal finance from there is coming to talk on That Money Show. I like to say we always bring in incredible guests. So that is a really, really exciting show coming up. But shall we kick off with the news? I think that is absolutely fair enough and something to do. Well, first up, how's your confidence at the moment? And in particular, how's your kind of consumer, your financial confidence? If your answer isn't great, well, that's because you are part of an entire nation who apparently has their consumer confidence falling yet again. We had this last month, a drop in consumer confidence, and we've got it yet again, mainly because of the feeling about something that's happening this Wednesday. I'm not sure if any of you are aware, but if you're not, I will bring up to you very quickly. Rachel Reeves, who I will be speaking to later on in this show, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, will be announcing her and Labour's first ever budget on Wednesday. Now, what is the budget? Well, the budget is kind of the opportunity for the government to come out and to make changes, fiscal changes, financial changes, changes to things like tax and generally things that affect the economy in terms of their spending and the amount they bring in, etc., etc. And this is a big one because it's Labour's first ever since being elected. It's happening this Wednesday. And the mood is not good. As I just told you, consumer confidence has fallen, mainly due to the expectations around this budget happening this week. And that's because the budget is not going to be one that is so pleasant. I mean, Keir Starmer literally came out, I think around lunchtime today or maybe even this morning, to say that there are going to be rises in taxes. And when taxes go up, people's confidence goes down and people generally are quite moody. I mean, I would be one of them. Obviously, we want to pay less tax. We want to give away less of our hard-earned money. But that doesn't seem to be the direction that you should be expecting on Wednesday. And it's in line, like we said, with consumer confidence. So I will dive into the budget in just a second. But let's take a look at what this drop in consumer confidence has actually said. Well, there was a 7-point plunge in September and just a one point drop in October. So we're down to minus 21. I can't exactly tell you what those numbers mean, but it's not positive, I assume, when it's minus. Just to give you kind of a bit of a contextual expectation, there is an assumption for most people that come around to like Black Friday and Christmas, there will still be quite a lot of spending, even with this lack of consumer confidence. And that's because there used to be a really strong link between consumer confidence and consumer spending. They are now starting to separate in terms of what they are. So don't just think that consumer confidence means no one's spending any money. It's just general outlook on the economy. So, like I said, the budget is happening this Wednesday. And what are our expectations? By our, I mean my expectations. Well, like I said, it's pretty much nailed on that taxes are going to rise. The question is, which tax and how much? So income tax, national insurance, fully frozen, okay? When I say frozen, by the way, what I mean is in the government's manifesto, they said they weren't touching those two, okay? What did they not say they weren't going to touch? So what are the things that are on the table? Well, we've got capital gains tax, we've got inheritance tax, we've got pensions that might be affected in some way, shape or form. We've got stamp duty. And of course, the little one that's been coming out recently, employers' national insurance. So this was a really big thing that was stressed, that employees' national insurance was what Labour meant during their manifesto when they said they weren't going to raise national insurance. But they didn't actually mean the amount of national insurance that your company pay on your behalf. So let's kind of go through each one and I'll give you a bit of a prediction and we'll kind of take a little bit of a look as to what could change, how it might change, and how that would affect you. So everything that you need to know. So let's start with capital gains tax. Capital gains tax is a tax that you pay when you kind of sell some kind of investment or asset that you own. So if you buy something and then you go and sell it with the intention of buying it, by the way, to be sold, because you kind of hold on to it, it rises in price, and then you sell it, you have to pay tax on that. Now, everyone in the UK, well, not everyone in the UK, most people in the UK get a £3,000 allowance, which means that you get £3,000 worth of capital gains that you can make or sell before you have to start paying tax. Now, there are a lot of intricacies, so please always look things up for your specific scenario, because there's different rates for, you know, different taxpayers. If you're a lower taxpayer, a higher taxpayer, an additional taxpayer, and there's also different rates depending on what you sell. So let's say you're renting a place, or, you know, you're selling things on Vinted, etc., etc. Everything is going to be a little bit different, and we've covered those in previous shows. But just generally, what we're either going to be looking at is yet another cut in the capital gains rate threshold that we get given. So a few years ago, it was £12,000 that you were allowed to sell before you had to pay any capital gains. Then it went down to six. It's currently three. That might go even lower after the budget. Or is it going to be something else? Is it going to be the actual percentage that you pay in tax that's going to go up? So I believe that for most people, again, if a higher rate taxpayer, it's around 24%, again, with an asterisk there, because there's different rates that you pay for different things that you sell. But there are rumors this might go up in line with income tax. Now, that would be a huge rise, especially if you're a higher rate taxpayer and the rate you pay goes up from 24 to 40%. Yeah, like I said, there are going to be some people that are not very happy on the other side of that announcement. If that's the thing that's announced, by the way. Big ifs. These are all rumors right now. Okay, what else have we got? Well, inheritance tax. A lot of things are kind of being looked at. There's been a lot of rumors going out, and that's kind of all that I'm addressing right now. These are all rumors. But inheritance tax, number one, there's a rumor that currently, under current, I suppose, conditions, when you pass away, you can kind of pass over everything tax-free to your spouse, to your partner, and then it starts to get taxed when you pass it on to next generations or to people that aren't your partner, essentially. Number one, that's being looked at. Is that going to still be allowed? Number two, threshold. So currently everyone gets £325,000 that they can pass on tax-free. And it goes up again if an estate is part of that. And then it goes down again if your estate is worth over too much. But again, those rates might start to trickle upwards. So people aren't too happy about that. Employers' national insurance. What are the current rumors? So you pay national insurance when you receive your income. This is something you should be aware of. The Tory government actually lowered that beginning of this year. It went from 12 to 10 to 8%. But your company actually have to pay 13.8% as a national insurance rate. Apparently, another thing that Labour are currently considering is raising the amount your employers have to pay for you from 13.8 to maybe 14.8, if not 15.8%. So that, whilst it sounds like it's not going to affect you, what people aren't talking about is the kind of trickle-down economics. So when your company have to start paying more, they need to get that money from somewhere. And is that somewhere going to be from the paychecks, the pensions, and all other benefits that they give to their employees? Maybe, perhaps. Just a few things to keep out for. Like I said, these are all rumors and guesses of things that are kind of circulating in the news right now. But I would always, always advise you to turn on your news on Wednesday. Maybe watch any reports that I like to put out, because, you know, I'm going to be putting out some things on my social media to try and keep you up to date. just give it a listen and make sure you are aware of the actual facts on the day itself. I want to try and change lanes for a second because I don't want to keep it all about the budget right now. We're going to get enough of that in next week's show. Another interesting story is, are you a cereal returner? And that isn't the return like Kellogg's and Weetabix and stuff like that. It's more of like, do you constantly buy things with the intention of returning them? Because if you do, you're part of quite a large group, especially if you're young people. Apparently, the average amount that someone sends back as a cereal returner is £1,400 worth of products every single year. That's a total of £6.6 billion across cereal returners. They account for 11% of all shoppers, but they account for a quarter, a quarter of the £27 billion forecast in returns. So there's a lot of returns. And the article that I'm kind of quoting right now has addressed a number of problems or different type ways that people are currently utilizing this kind of return policy. The fact that so many companies offer such amazing return policies, but they're kind of like taking advantage of it. So number one, there's a lot of people that are practicing the order of bracketing, where you order extra sizes or extra colors because you know that you're going to pick your favorite one and return the best. Are you a bracketer? Or maybe you're a wardrober, someone of the 16% of people that return stuff who bought clothes or footwear to wear for a short period of time before returning it. That's a real, like, that's a shake in my head. You're buying it, you're wearing it, and then you're returning it back. I really hope I'm not wearing something right now that's happened to. That is out of order. Wardrobing. That's what we call you. And lastly, another 16% that people buy clothes according to something called staging. Now, staging is where you buy something, you wear it, you post it on social media, and then you return it just to look good. Now, please, please tell me you're not doing this. I mean, is that actually a thing? I've never done that. I can promise you I have never done that. But I suppose it is. You know, there's people that try and look flashy and try and look really like rich and wealthy on social media. But it's all fake. They're returning the stuff the moment it comes to them. So these are the kind of three key ways that cereal returners are kind of using. And it kind of is going to kind of make sense for me to kind of share with you that companies are stamping down on this. And how are they stamping down on it? Well, we used to have kind of free deliveries, free returns, as much as you want. There's no minimum order. Like, companies were kind of competing with each other. But it seems to be going the other way now, where companies are starting to charge you for delivery. And even more so, they are charging you for returns. I mean, right now in front of me, I says that ASOS has recently informed some shoppers that if they are frequent returners constantly, they will be charged a fee every return of £3.95 unless they keep up to £40 worth of items. And then other companies, H&M, Boohoo, New Look, Uniqlo, they've all started charging for online returns unless you actually go and physically return something in store. Do I think this is right? Yeah, I think, like, obviously we're taking advantage of these free return schemes. And it seems like these 11% of cereal returners are ruining it for the rest of us. So please stop doing it if you're a bracketer or a wardrobe or a stager. Actually, I think I might be a bracketer. But we can skip that one for now. But guys, that's it for now. You are officially up to speed with the news. Remember, stick around and listen next week because we're going to be covering Wednesday's budget in its complexity. But stick around after this because I'm going to be joined by Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Foodbar Radio.
What the hell with Gabby Allen?
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, do you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuck boy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey. You know what I mean?
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You want to go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel Nussbaum, aka That Money Guy, aka Gabriel Nussbaum. And boy, oh boy, do we have a great interview for you here today. Now, about a month ago, I was given the chance to sit down with Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the person in control of the country's purse strings. And she's got a big announcement this Wednesday when it comes to the budget. But I sat down with her and I spoke to her about expectations for the country, the state of housing, especially for first-time buyers and young people, and just generally some personal finance tips and tricks. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this interview.
I'm Rachel Reeves and I'm Chancellor of the Exchequer.
I'd love to ask, how does someone become Chancellor of the Exchequer? What was it that inspired you to pursue this career?
Before I became a Member of Parliament, I worked in banking and financial services as an economist at the Bank of England and then in the private sector. But I've always been interested in politics. I joined the Labour Party when I was at secondary school because my sixth form was a couple of prefab huts in the playground. Our school library was turned into a classroom because there were more children than there was space. And as for textbooks, there were never enough to go around. So I've always been motivated about putting something back into society and achieving what I think are two sides of the same coin, economic growth and social justice. And you achieve that by making sure that everyone has a chance to fulfil their potential. So when I got the chance to stand for Parliament, I guess always my dream job was to be Chancellor of the Exchequer. And that's what I'm doing today. And I've been doing for the last 80 days since I was appointed.
It's a pretty cool job to have. And I'd love to ask for people that look at you and are inspired by your career, what's one tip you would say to someone that potentially wants to be a future Chancellor of the Exchequer?
I think that everybody should follow their dreams and aim high. You know, when I was at school, when I was growing up, my mum and dad would never have imagined that I was going to become a Bank of England economist, a Member of Parliament, certainly not Chancellor of the Exchequer. That wasn't what was normal in my family or my school. And so, I always took opportunities when they came my way. I worked hard and I believed that I could do it. And I guess I would just encourage all people, but particularly young women, because I'm the first ever woman to be Chancellor of the Exchequer and the post has existed for 800 years.
Oh, wow.
Just to say to all young women and girls, there's no ceiling on your ambition. You can achieve whatever you want. Aim high, dream big, and you can realise your dreams too.
Wow, that's a pretty cool motto to live by, I suppose. And as you already know, I like to talk about financial education.
Yes.
On the internet. And perhaps looking back at any period of your life, what's one financial tip that you really carry through still today? Something that you really hold by that you wish you could share with other people?
Well, something that I will always remember and had a big influence on me was my mum and how she managed her finances. My mum and dad were both primary school teachers, so we weren't poor, certainly not, but we weren't well off, and my parents got divorced when I was quite young, and so there wasn't loads of money to go around. My mum had to be really careful with money, and every month when she'd got her bank statement, she would go through all of her receipts, because she kept them, and tick them off against the bank statement, because she didn't have money to spare. And I always remember that. For my mum, the sums always had to add up. And I'm now Chancellor of the Exchequer, and I'm in charge of the public finances, but of course the public finances also have a real impact on people's family finances. And I will always think of people like my mum and people with less money than that who always have to make their sums up add up, and thinking about how as a government we can make it a little bit easier for ordinary working people to have a bit more money in their pockets to spend on the things that matter to them.
Brilliant. So what are your plans for the economy, especially in terms of helping working people?
Well, that is front and centre of the agenda of this new government, to bring growth back to our economy, to lift living standards for working people and ensure there are more good jobs paying decent wages in all parts of the country. Our economy has got a huge potential. I see it everywhere I go, with start-up and scale-up businesses, high street businesses giving new life to their local communities, from big brands who want to invest in Britain but haven't had the stability from government and policy these last few years. I know if we can bring investment back to Britain, we can bring growth back, and with growth comes higher wages that you can support a family on and save for the future, and also good jobs in your local area. That's what I want to achieve as Chancellor, ensuring that living standards improve and ensuring that people have access to good jobs paying decent wages.
I don't think we can talk about money and finances without also talking about housing. It's probably one of the most relevant topics when it comes to finances and the economy in general. And as a young person and speaking to many peers, and also being a financial educator and speaking to many young people on the internet, it's very evident that the idea of owning a property is becoming, and I feel like I've said this to you before, more of a dream than a reality. Now that you are in power and you know this is kind of your roadmap that you're building out, what are the plans to make housing more affordable for young people?
So the key thing is the mismatch at the moment between demand and supply. There's a lot of demand for housing, but there's not enough supply. We need to be building the homes that families, that young people need. And that's why we've made a commitment to build 1.5 million homes in this parliament. That's a massive ask. It's a huge step up from where we've been the last few years. But unless we get those homes built, we're going to have the level of home ownership continuing to decline, and more young people and families being priced out of being able to own their own home. But I know that home ownership for some people is going to feel a long way off for a long time to come. And so we need to fix other parts of the housing market as well. We want to build more social housing to give security for people in the social housing sector and give more people that opportunity. But we also need to fix the private rental market, which is so important for young people particularly, but increasingly actually for families and older people as well. And that's why we've made the commitment to end once and for all no-fault evictions and have stronger rules around what landlords can and can't do. I hope that that will give more security for people in the private rented sector that already exists, for example, in the social rented sector, and the security that you have from owning your own home.
Brilliant. I'd love to kind of like dive a little bit deeper into that, and specifically for first time buyers. Yeah. There are some policies that exist, some obviously stronger than others. Are there any policies that you're hoping to look at currently changing, or new ones that you're hoping to bring in to really assist that person from, like you mentioned, potentially they're in the place now where they're renting and then they're hopefully going to have more protection, but taking that leap to home ownership for the first time in their life?
Well, I think we need to do more to ensure that you don't have to rely on the bank of mum and dad to be able to buy your own home. home. You know, if you're lucky enough that your parents perhaps have some equity in their home or have some savings that they're willing to donate or lend to you, that's great. But there are a lot of young people, I know in my constituency in Leeds, where parents don't have those sorts of resources to be able to help their kids. And that's why we're looking at things like a guarantor scheme to help more young people get on the housing ladder. But I think the most important thing of all is to build homes. Because unless we're building homes, what we're going to find is that the prices continue to go up and up and up, and the number of people looking to buy their own home is not going to be met by the supply of homes available. And that's why we've brought back targets, for example, so local authorities can't just not build, they have to build. Of course, they can decide where that building takes place in their communities, but saying no all the time to new housing development just can't continue to be an option. It's why we've said that we will, whilst having a brownfield first approach to building urban areas, that we will also look at those parts of the green belt that aren't green and aren't nature rich to ensure that we can meet our housing ambitions for young people and families. And it's why we're reforming the planning system to get it, make it easier for builders to build and to make it harder for the blockers to stop the development that we really, really need, including with new towns, which is something that we can replicate some of that success we had in the post-war period of building new towns, new communities, a place for people to live.
That's wonderful. And I have one final question, and I love asking this one, because earlier I asked you what's that one financial tip from your childhood or from a period of your life that you carry forward. But I want to flip it the other way around now. So now something, you said you've worked in finance, you're now Chancellor of the Exchequer. What's one thing that you've learned now, something that maybe, you know, a more recent lesson, that you would look back at a younger version of yourself and you would say, you should have known this one earlier, it really would have helped?
Gosh, that's a really great question. I guess sort of one of the things that I've had to grapple with since becoming Chancellor of the Exchequer is the sort of hole in the public finances. And some people have said to me, oh, because you've been honest about the state of the public finances, that has made people gloomy about the economy. Well, the alternative is not being honest about the scale of the challenge. And I've always believed that being honest and open and transparent is the best policy approach. And also, you shouldn't treat people like fools, and we should be open about the scale of the challenge, but then have a plan to fix it. And I'm not sure if this analogy exactly works, but I think people should be open and honest about their finances as well. And a lot of people I know in Britain do get into financial difficulty. The charity Step Change is based in Leeds, where I'm a member of Parliament, and they do great work helping people who get into financial difficulty. But I think people should be open and honest about their finances and get help if you need it. Because there are a lot of people who are struggling with debt and aren't seeking support and advice. And support and advice is there. And people who get into those difficult situations should get that advice to get out of a tricky situation.
I think the analogy worked really well, by the way. I think it works very well for what you were saying.
If there's a step change for for governments with £22 billion black holes, then that'd be great to know about.
That'd be a great charity to exist at this point in time. But no, I think you're so spot on, because a lot of people ignore their finances. They let things build up and up and up. And often I say to people that looking is one of the first steps to actually change your entire financial future. I would kind of echo everything you've just said. So thank you very much.
Well, it's great to meet you again. And last time we met, it was a couple of weeks before the general election when I was Shadow Chancellor. And it's really fantastic to continue to work with you now that I'm Chancellor of the Exchequer. And good luck in making sure that people, particularly young people, get access to financial tips, which I know you're providing.
Looking forward to the next interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.
FUPAR Radio. What the hell with Gabby Allen?
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird.
Well, welcome back. How was that for an interview? Not too bad. We got Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, to share some of her thoughts for the future on That Money Show. Pretty cool, eh? Would you guys like some money tips this week? We give you money tips absolutely every single week. So why would we change it this week in particular? And this is going to sound a little bit strange, but I want to pivot a little bit and talk to you about number one, Black Friday, which is in about a month from now, and number two, Christmas. I know, it's too early. I actually don't think it's too early. The clocks went back like last Saturday night. It's officially Christmas time. But I want you to get ready for it now from a financial perspective. And let me explain to you why, okay? Christmas, well, Black Friday in particular, where a lot of people do their shopping for Christmas because of the sales, is roughly 30-ish days away. That is an incredible amount of time because of something called the 30-day rule, where you plan something that you want to buy now, and in 30 days, you'll actually know whether you want to buy it or whether it was just a bit of a phase in your mind and you can actually save money by not buying it. So what you're going to do is, number one, you're going to make a list of everything that you need to buy. Number two, you're going to track the items. You're going to note down how much they cost right now, okay? Number three is you're going to put price trackers on. You're going to turn them on. Google price trackers, price about spy or something like that. Keeper, K-E-E-P-A, Camel. Anything that tracks them on Amazon or wherever you want to buy them from. Number four, you're going to start gathering discount codes for all of the websites that you need to buy things from. Number five, you're going to use this 30-day rule to decide whether or not you actually want to buy them. And number six, get set, ready, go. Okay? You can buy them on Black Friday as long as they've been on your list from today. No impulse purchases, because that's where most people waste most of their money when it comes to shopping for Christmas. You're going to plan it now, make a list, and stick to it. Because remember, if you save 50% on something that you wanted to buy anyway, you've saved 50%. However, if you spend all your, let's say you buy something only because it's 50% off, you're wasting all of your money. No doom scrolling on Black Friday and shopping for Christmas. Anyway, stick around, because straight after this, I'm going to be joined by Brian Burns, the head of personal finance at Moneybox.
Foobar Radio.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuckboy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
You're listening to Foobar Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Foobar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for Foobar Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The Foobar Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back, and we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, tell us a little bit more.
We're going there.
Access
All Areas, mate.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think you said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show, live on Foobar Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And joining me now, live on That Money Show, is Brian Burns, the head of personal finance at Moneybox. You might have heard his voice before because this is his second appearance. He forms part of a rare group of people that have had appearance number two on the show. But welcome. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm good. Thank you very much for having me back. I feel honoured to be one of those rare guests that gets to come back on.
Absolute pleasure. I mean, you must have really impressed a few people in the scenes. You definitely impressed me first time round. But I was hoping that this conversation wouldn't be too negative. But I mean, we want to talk about the budget. And it does seem like it's not going to be the funnest of days for us people in personal finance on Wednesday. And then even more so just generally for the entire nation, who have to actually end up paying the money in the tax rises that are inevitably coming, as per Keir Starmer's comments this morning. How's your overall sentiment down at Moneybox?
Well, look, I think the good thing is that the speculation is nearly over. It's been a long 4 months since the election heading into this budget. That's been the longest gap between an election and a budget for a new government in about 50 years. So Wednesday will come and it will go. There will still be plenty of opportunities afterwards for people to efficiently save, invest, buy houses, plan for their retirement, all that sort of stuff. So it will just be good to get some certainty, as I say, after Wednesday and move on from the speculation.
Absolutely. A little bit of clarity, I think, is very much needed. I mean, I spent the first 10 minutes of the show, kind of throwing out all of the rumours that have basically been in the news for now what feels like about a month or so. You know, something new, throw it out there. Is it inheritance tax? Is it capital gains tax? Is it employers' national insurance? Is it our pensions that are going to be raided? Or is it just, you know, good old stamp duty, etc., etc.? What are your main predictions for this Wednesday?
Well, let's touch on the things that we would like to see first. And unfortunately, I kind of think maybe that might be a little bit different from what we actually will see on Wednesday.
But I like it. A bit of positivity to start.
The real thing that we would like to see, and you touched on it there with your previous interview with the Chancellor, is support for first-time buyers. We think that is absolutely crucial for many reasons. A, we know how important it is for people's financial security to get onto the property ladder as early as they possibly can do in life. But we also know that once people do that, they move on to other financial goals very quickly. So building up emergency funds, starting to invest, saving for their retirement. So it's a really kind of crucial first step. The Chancellor referenced there their intention to build lots more houses, which is absolutely crucial as well. We know we don't have enough houses for people to purchase in this country, but we also need to support people to save up deposits to buy those houses when they do become available. So we have heavily been pushing the Chancellor and the Treasury to have a look at future-proofing the lifetime ISA, because millions of people are successfully saving into the lifetime ISA now, but with some small tweaks, it could be an absolutely even better product going forwards to help people buy those 1.5 million houses that Labour are kind of planning to build. So that's the main one that we're hopeful for. Beyond that, other things that are under consideration, we're really just hoping that any sort of personal finance or taxation measures that might come on Wednesday just have an eye to building a positive saving and investing culture within the UK. We are very, very good savers within this country, but we know that there's more to do to help people invest for their future, be that in ISAs, pensions, whatever that might be. So let's get some certainty in those areas and just have an eye on building that investing culture that we know is so important.
I think you've pretty much hit the nail on the head there, because I feel like we're quite strong people here in the UK. Like, we can handle a bit of bad news. I mean, you walk around London and it looks like people are permanently being given bad news just by the looks on their faces. So I think we can handle the bad news. I think a lot of it is a bit about this kind of trepidation. No one's quite sure what's going to happen, which is kind of obviously emphasizing all of the negative things that might be happening. But like you mentioned, if it can be like, we are doing this with the intention because of in XYZ in 2, 3, 4 years time, you're going to start to see the benefits of something, I think most people can handle that information, especially like you mentioned, as long as they're still incentivizing a strong saving culture, pension culture, helping young people in some way, shape or form, that'd be great. And if they could sprinkle on top some good news, like you mentioned about lifetime ISAs and that kind of product, that'd be brilliant, especially for someone like me who's about to be penalised by, what's the number right now? Almost £1,000, I think I'm going to be giving back to the government if I withdraw my lifetime ISA for a property. Not ideal, but that's the price I pay for wanting to live in London and wanting to buy a property over £450,000. But hey-o, it is what it is. Obviously, there have been a lot of rumours. Like I mentioned just before, inheritance tax has gone through the mill. National insurance, from the employer side, I have to say, because, you know, manifestos promised us no tax to national insurance. And then they added the asterisk later on, right? Employees, national insurance. There's been rumours around, capital gains, an extension in the freeze of income tax bans. Are there any kind of key ones that you are keeping an eye on? What do you make of the rumours overall and why there are so many out there?
I think the reason there's been so many out there is just the length of time, as I say, between the election and the budget. It's just been rife for speculation over the course of the last 4 months. But as I say, within 48 hours, we'll have a bit more clarity there. I think the ones we will almost certainly see from what has been trailed so far is, you've mentioned there, increases to employers' national insurance, potentially increases to capital gains tax. And it does look like, I think the Chancellor even confirmed it last week, changes to government rules on their rules on debt and investment. On the other side, I think what we will see as well is increased spending on public services. So going back to your point there about we are resilient, I think if the messaging really matters. So if we do see those increases on things like employers' national insurance or capital gains tax or whatever it might be, but we can also see the trade-off of big increased spending on public services, that's something that I think the public can get on board with.
Yeah. Do any of those give you any concern? Are there any of those in particular that you've heard rumoured going around the rumour mills that have given you kind of that kind of flashing red warning sign, because you can't quite see, like we said, the light at the end of the tunnel? And I'll give you an example for me. What I was reading this morning was another one about, you know, freezing personal income tax bans up until 2030, currently banned until 2028, banned from being moved until 2028. And for me, the reason why that concerns me so much isn't so much obviously about maybe the absolute numbers, but it's more because of the lack of knowledge within the UK system for people to even be aware that there's going to be less money in their pocket at the end of the day because of doing something like that. And it's extending it yet another 2 years obviously the only incentive or the objective is to raise more money. But from my side, people are losing money without really knowing why they're even losing money in the first place. That's my red flag. Which are yours?
So you flagged one there, and those are called stealth taxes, and the government do quite like looking at stealth taxes, because as the name suggests, they're a little bit more difficult for the public to realise, because you don't see them on your paycheck. So something like employers' national insurance, which the employer pays, you don't see that on your paycheck, but it does increase the cost to the employer of employing you beyond, as I say, just your salary. The other one is those income tax freezes, as you say. People don't notice being dragged into higher bands. So those so-called stealth taxes are some things to look out for. I wouldn't necessarily say overly concerned. I think from a practical personal finance perspective, there's limited things that you can do about those kind of big picture things that the government decides to do, and they have to balance the books of the country in the best way that they can see possible. As I say, unless something absolutely remarkable changes on Wednesday, there will still be tax efficient ways to save, invest, buy homes, and save for your retirement. And as I say, that messaging side of things really matters. One thing that I'm looking out for, this government has signaled since they've been elected, and actually before that, taking a look at the future of ISAs within this country. So there may well be something in there in terms of a consultation of what savers, investors, and providers might want to see with the future of things like cash ISAs, stocks and shares ISAs, and hopefully the lifetime ISA as well, so that we can do something about the house price limit that you mentioned there. The lifetime ISA gives you £1,000 free every year from the government, and you can use that either for retirement or to save for your first home up to £450,000. It does work fantastically well in most parts of the country, but that £450,000 cap does become a problem in London and the South East. So if we get the opportunity to contribute to a consultation on the future of ISAs and lifetime ISAs after Wednesday, I'll be very pleased that we can hopefully do that in the interest of consumers. So as I say, there's stealth taxes and stuff on one side of the equation, but there will still be plenty of opportunities for people to save for their financial goals, no matter what is announced on Wednesday.
Yeah, you could say that one positive thing that's come out of this month, or even 4 months of discussion around what the budget might or might not contain has been the fact that I feel like this is the most anticipated budget in recent history, if not in history full stop. You've got more people interested in money, talking about the budget, discussing it, even if it is all with this kind of negative spin on it. At least there are more people talking about money and trying to figure out, well, what can we actually do? What movements should we be doing? What changes should we be making to our own personal finances? In expectation of some things or in reaction to whatever is announced on Wednesday. Do you have any kind of tips or advice that you're starting to share with people about how they should be either moving or anticipating the budget, or more likely at this point, reacting to the budget?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is don't panic and do anything rash. We have seen stories from across the industry of people trying to get ahead of the budget, predict what's going to come out of it, and making changes to their personal finances. For example, people pulling money out of pensions, for example, trying to get ahead of what might come on Wednesday. And those things have consequences. It's very difficult, obviously, to predict what is going to come out of the budget. And if you withdraw from your pension, it's very difficult to put that money back in afterwards if what you have thought was coming in the budget doesn't happen. So don't panic and do anything rash. It is a budget to pay attention to. I have been on budget reaction shows before where nothing has happened and it's been very difficult to fill the time in terms of things that have been announced. I don't think that will be the case on Wednesday. It looks like we are going to get a raft of measures that will impact people's personal finances. But as I say, there will still be measures there for people to hit their financial goals. If we take the capital gains rumor, for example, and potentially increasing capital gains on share sales, yes, that is an increase to the headline rate of capital gains tax. But on the other side of that, you will still have your ISA allowance, for example. Most people can save or invest up to £20,000 a year currently into an ISA and not pay any capital gains on future investment growth kind of going forward. So I would keep an eye out for those headline rates and headline changes that we might see on Wednesday, but always remember that there are accounts, tools there to help you save and invest kind of tax-free going forwards, no matter what the capital gains rate kind of might be. So it's just about balancing that off, paying attention and paying attention to the budget and starting to look at what accounts might be out there to help you towards your financial goals.
Yeah, if anything, what I'm taking from what you're saying is utilize the information, utilize those changes to actually go and educate yourself on what are the best practices for you in those scenarios. Like you mentioned, if you are someone that's being worried by this recent announcement of capital gains and the first time you're hearing about it, maybe the positive outcome for it is you're going to learn about ISAs for the first time in your life and start to utilize those a little bit more. So, do you know what, Brian? I do appreciate it. I think that this was probably the most positive outcome of a conversation around the budget happening this Wednesday that I could have had with anyone. So I appreciate that. Is there any kind of last warnings or words you want to share with our listeners?
No, as I say, we've covered it off mostly. I think it's a budget certainly to pay attention to, but it's not something to be despondent about. There is still plenty of people out there actively saving, investing, purchasing homes and retiring. That will still be the case after Wednesday's announcements as well.
Well, brilliant. Brian Burns, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Well, there you go. That was Brian Burns of Moneybox giving us a slightly more positive spin than I had given us on the budget happening this Wednesday. But remember, stick around and join us next week, because that will be actual analysis of the facts and not just the rumors. It's time for Scam of the Week, where I don't scam you, because that would be a weird thing to do on a money show, but I actually warn you about a scam that's going on right now. And this week, it's about Nectar Points. You know those things that you get if you are a loyal customer of Sainsbury's? Well, they're being stolen, and they're being stolen in the masses. There was one result from, I believe, I can't even remember right now. Over £1 million worth of Nectar Points essentially have been stolen. And the people that are being stolen from have no idea how this is happening. They don't remember being scammed, having any text messages about Nectar Points, giving their Nectar card information away, or just having any kind of fraudulent activity around their Nectar Points. So this is just something to be aware of. Please, if you are a Nectar customer or a Sainsbury's customer, this is your opportunity to double check your accounts and make sure that the numbers in there are still the same, that you aren't one of those over £1 million worth of Nectar points being stolen. And if you are, please get in contact with Nectar, well, with Sainsbury's, because they will reimburse you if you're stolen. That's something that they will do. Now, it is time for your questions every single week we get written into by people up and down the country DMing us at That Money Show on Instagram. That's our handle, by the way. It's not at, I'm not using, like, using the word, like the at symbol, That Money Show on Instagram, where you can write in and ask us any question you have around money, and I like to answer them here live on the show. And we've got a few questions, and remember, if you are watching live, you do have the opportunity right now to ask a question and I will answer it live on air. This is a great, great part, actually probably my favorite part of the entire show. And we're going to kick off with Elliot's question, actually, who has asked, I have seen a few switch offers from NatWest, Lloyds and First Direct totaling about £600 in free money, free in inverted commas. Should I take advantage of these? So for those of you that aren't aware of what Elliot is asking about, there's a lot of banks and current accounts that give you incentives and literally financial money incentives if you switch to them as your current account. And I've seen some as high as £200 in the past. So they will literally say, if you switch everything over to us, which is really easy to do these days, you can use something called the current account switch service, where they move all of your stuff across, all of your direct debits, all of your standing orders, literally with a click of a button. They do it for you in about a week and move all of your money across. And you get paid for doing that, about £200. Now, someone's asking if you can switch a few times between various ones of these accounts. So you switch, you get the reward, then you switch again, you get the reward. Should you take advantage of those? The answer is absolutely yes, you should. Why would you not be able to take advantage of money? I know people that have literally earned thousands of pounds from bank switching. Now, of course, you need to make sure that you read the terms and conditions to make sure you actually qualify for the switch amount. And the only other thing that I would say to you as a little bit of a warning, a little bit of a red flag, is if you have any kind of, what's the right word, loan that you might be applying for in the future, or any kind of credit check. So for example, if you're applying for a mortgage or a car finance scheme, applying for a job within the financial world where they might do a credit check on you, applying for a new contract like a phone contract or a TV contract, things that basically require the person you're borrowing money for to do a hard check against you, these switches might negatively impact your credit score because you're moving from bank to bank to bank. And obviously, as a credit reporter, people are going to be a bit confused. Why are you constantly moving between banks? If you don't have any of these coming up in the near future, then by all means, get involved in this and you can switch and earn that free money. Especially, by the way, if you're not happy with your current account at this present point in time, don't just switch for the free money. Switch because there are better banks out there, and you should always make sure that you are happy with your current account, and don't just settle because that's the one that was open for you when you were like 13 years old by your parents. Actually utilize the one that has the best reviews on the market. So yeah, go for it. But remember that caution about your credit score. It might negatively impact your credit score. Question number two is from Neil. I've recently purchased a property and I've been offered the opportunity to buy the freehold to the property. Is it worth doing? It's going to cost around £750, but I like the idea of owning everything. That is a really complicated question. Honestly, it's had my mind spinning. Like, I'm just thinking of like complicated words that could go with that, like onomatopoeia or something like that. But freehold, leasehold, it's a very, very complicated topic. My easy answer for those of you who do understand the question is yes. Yes, you should take a kind of hold of the freehold. Under a few kind of asterisks. Number one is that it comes with added responsibility. You are now literally in charge of the freehold of the property. That means like you kind of own the land. You can have a really long extended lease. And number two is obviously it costs to buy the freehold. So if that cost is reasonable and you've done your research and you are happy with that cost, then again, it might be something you want to do because you get, what's it called, control of your property. For those of you who are a bit confused by the answers I'm giving, normally, especially with flats, when you purchase them, you get they'll either be under a leasehold or under a freehold. Freehold means you literally like own the land that they're on. Leasehold means that you kind of, it's a bit like, how do I explain it? It's a bit like renting a property, but you're not renting it, you own it. So for example, a property might have a leasehold of 200 years, which means by the time that leasehold expires, that property, whoever's inside of it, will actually go back to the person who owns the freehold. Okay, so you have a lease on it, but the freeholder will get back control of that property in 200 years. That never really happens because people like renew the leasehold. So it goes, you know, once it gets down to 100 years, someone might push it back up to like 999 years, et cetera, et cetera. I can see, by the way, that people are asking how to ask questions. You DM us on Instagram at That Money Show and we will answer all of your questions. So yeah, that's what a leasehold versus a freehold is. The magic number that you need to know when it comes to leaseholds and freeholds, especially if you're going to buy a property that is like a flat or something like that, is 80 years. After 80 years, renewing leaseholds becomes really bloody expensive. So much so that I once went to look at a property and its leasehold remaining, the amount of time it had on it, was about 50 years. It would have cost me £100,000 to renew the leasehold. That's cash that I have to spend. Obviously, I did not buy that property, but that's just a case study that you need to know of leasehold versus freehold. So if it is right for you and you want that little bit of control, I like the idea of being a freeholder personally over a leaseholder. It just makes me, you know, more confident. Anyway, that's all we got time for today, guys. I know you are officially better with your money. I told you you would be. I want to say a quick thank you, firstly, to the Labour team and to Rachel Reeves for giving me the opportunity to sit down with her. That's quite a privilege, and I really appreciate it. I know that she's probably as busy as she's ever been with the budget coming on Wednesday. And number two to Brian Burns and the Moneybox team, because that was another great interview. And I'm sure off the back of that, Brian is going to come part of the prestige club of three in a row. Not in a row, but like three interviews as it is. Anyway, remember, you can listen to us live on the FUBAR app. You can find us at That Money Show on all social media platforms. You can listen back on every podcasting platform. And I have been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. And you are officially better with your money.